You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
This time where we call it this National Day of Thanksgiving, it's a strange thing in the church, a strange holiday, because we generally celebrate it by what, watching football?
Uh-huh.
Now I checked today, there's three NFL games to choose from on Thursday.
Yes.
And then what are you going to be eating on Thursday?
I will probably have a mixture of turkey and shellfish, which is my California tradition. We get oysters and turkey. It's the weirdest thing, but it's one of my favorite. But we will overeat. That's my
goal. That's it. There's going to be all of that. And then we're all going to be in food comas by Thursday evening, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's just because that's our way of saying thank you to God. We put ourselves into a food coma.
So that's the American... Our kind of rolling form of this thank you is national sports, a pretty violent sport, and this overeating kind of thing in adulterers, which I'm all for. These are our altars, but this is a different form of holiday because it's a national holiday, but it definitely has overtones of Christian religious. Christian religions have always tried to grab
things. If we look back into our text, whether it's our Hebrew texts or our New Testament text, we're going to see information on this notion of giving thanks. Now, you've been to seminary more recently than I have.
It's been a
child.
While.
You know, what can I say? But what do you remember about the Hebrew text and what they had to say about
Thanksgiving
or how that was lived out?
Was always a part of the tradition of any people who followed the divine, that this inclination towards returning to God. Now, sometimes that became a sacrificial type of...
Right.
Giving in the sense of ought to, but that begins to change as we move forward and progress as we process with God what's going on.
Well, there's also that sense of place, because if something important happened or something that was considered holy to be happened, you built an altar right in that place.
There was the history of the Jewish people were to build in that location a shrine, a replica, or an altar where sacrifice would continue, and a memorial spot to say, look what God has done on our behalf, and people were returned to that space on a regular basis to give thanks to God for that. It was instituted in both a physical space and in a liturgical practice to return to it.
Yeah.
So that's continued forward, though, and the New Testament picks it up and then takes
transitions,
another step.
And the things that we often forget, and it seems so cliche, but I'm never surprised at it doesn't always click with people, but that Jesus, his disciples, his followers, they were all practicing Jews. So they were following the rule of the temple and everything that happened. But through Jesus' teaching, he was starting to take us some different directions, moving beyond temple practice. And today we're going to be focusing on a passage that often is used at Thanksgiving services, because it's one of the few times that a gospel writer, and at this point in particular, Luke, talks about the subject of giving thanks. But of course, we're going to turn it on its head today.
Absolutely.
And so we're going to share with you a passage that Luke recounted when Jesus was making his way to Jerusalem, and he'd been traveling in the region of Samaria and Galilee. And the story went like this. Luke tells us that while Jesus was traveling and was on his way between these cities, he encountered a village. And in that village, 10 lepers, not leopards. Somebody was talking about
leopards.
Lepers. Brad, for your sake today, 10 lepers approached him. Now we've got to remember, while this isn't something that's part of our culture right now, lepers were outcast. They were the untouchable. They were separated out. 10 of them approached Jesus, but they kept their distance, and they called out to him saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy. Have mercy on us. And when he saw them, when he saw these lepers, these outcasts, he said to them, go and show yourself to the priests. Go and show yourself to the priests. And so they made their way to the priests. And this is really an amazing thing, telling these unpeople to go to the priests who would not receive these people. Mm-hmm. And as they were going to him, miraculously, they were made clean.
And then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, get up and go your own way. Your faith has made you well.
So do any of you remember hearing that passage before? Maybe in Sunday school years ago or at church? And let's think about it. All the times that perhaps you've heard it before, there's usually a certain way that this passage is taught or preached more often than not. And that's we choose to focus on that there was only one person who was going to give thanks to God for this miraculous thing that happened. And of course, we tend to do that in a pejorative way where we're holding up that one person and looking at the other nine and saying, what a bunch of losers. They didn't come back and they didn't give thanks to God for this amazing work that had been done. Or at least that's the way we typically have gone about preaching this passage. Yes. Now, sometimes we dig even a little deeper, don't we?
Yeah, and this is very interesting what's going on in the overall Luke's narrative, mm-hmm. is that he is beginning to question some of the temple practice because, as you said earlier, Jesus is pulling through the gospel writers away from a temple-centric practice. Mm-hmm. So he has this narrative of a half-breed foreigner who has the wherewithal to hold the place that the Jews had been practicing, an effort mm-hmm. of thanksgiving, building a place and a liturgy to say thank you. And the others who were part of that practice did not. There is a critique that's embedded in this, mm-hmm. but that critique is sometimes becomes an ought to. Yep. And if you've ever been in a situation where you've heard this text taught to you in a manner that says, if you're not thankful, you're bad. And it becomes a shame-based form of religious practice. And I don't think that's what was at work here. I don't think Jesus was trying to shame us into being thankful. And if you've ever tried to be thankful through shame, it doesn't really work. It doesn't lead to a place of gratitude. No. It leads to a place of resentment. So it doesn't deliver on the thing that Jesus is calling out. So we're going to try something a little different.
And we shouldn't even forget to point out, too, that they were digging even a little deeper on this whole issue about the Samaritan. Because what we got to remember, Samaritans were the outcast. So here's this dynamic we set up. Not only was it just one person who said thank you, but it was the outcast who said thank you. So it confuses this whole thing because there were many who just looked at Samaria with such a jaundiced look and said, you know, this is what was responsible for the destruction of the northern kingdom. This is why the kingdom of Israel disappeared. The intermarrying, all of that stuff that went on.
Yes. So we're going to try something a little different today.
Do you think we're up for this?
Well, I think so. Let's give a little prerequisite.
Yep.
So we're going to try to do a practice called Midrash. Now, about the time the gospel writers get cranked up at the destruction of the temple in AD 70, a group of Hebrew writers start writing at the same time. And in their tradition, a form of writing called Midrash comes about. Now, this practice, think of it as loyal opposition. It's a way that there is a difference of opinion or a different read applied to the same text. And there's a technique behind it that's trying to get at something. So one of my favorite rabbinical writers is a guy named Lawrence Kushner, who one of his books he's written is called God Was in This Place and We Did Not Know It. And he takes one passage of scripture and writes 10 different chapters on the same text with mm-hmm. a different point of view on each, often contradicting himself on the same thing. The point being that the loyal opposition is a good thing to help us find balance and ask bigger questions. That we begin to interrogate the text, therefore giving the text permission to interrogate mm-hmm. us. Midrash is that practice of loyal opposition.
And in our Christian tradition, in a lot of respects, what you hear on Sundays, whether it's coming from a dialogue like this or someone in a pulpit, it is our own Christian midrash. But we also have writers who have been
doing this
writing their own kind of midrash, and one of them I refer to today, it's an Episcopal priest by the name of Martin Bell, who did some particular writing on this passage. And he asked the question in this writing, what about the other nine?
Yeah. The other nine lepers, what happened there? And he takes this text and unpacks it a little bit. There's a a Jewish parable that talks about these three rabbis that were arguing over a passage about the divine. They were having this terrible argument that kept getting more and more heated. One rabbi was making the point and pointing his finger saying, it's like this, and God said this, and we should behave like this. And the next rabbi said, no, you're all wrong. It's like this, and we should do this thing. And the third rabbi was complaining the other direction, and they had three different opinions all going down. And it became such a tense thing that God self stepped out of heaven, came up to these three rabbis and said, that's enough. I'm going to settle it. I'll tell you how the text is to be interpreted. And the three rabbis said, wait a minute. Who are you to tell us how this text is to go? The point being that the very act of engaging the text is a divine act. It is something sacred within all of our tradition. Mm-hmm. So to read it intensely and intently with an open heart to allow it to read us is a tradition that's been going on for hundreds and thousands of years. So we're joining in that older tradition.
Yep. So what we're going to ask you to do today is to consider, what about the others? This is your job. This is your task today. This is how you're going to personalize this text to yourself. But we're going to give you some assistance.
Yes.
Because we're going to hear now.
Some lepers are going to share their story.
Hi. I was a leper. Can you scoot back a little bit? You're making me a little nervous. Thank you. I'm a little skittish. So, okay. So this is what happened, right? I was a leper one day. I was doing my leper thing with all the lepers. We all get together and we do our leper thing outside of the village, right? So next thing you know, by the way, the rabbis, they tell us to be about 100 paces away from the village, right? Because they're so great and all their infinite wisdom. And then they want us to be off the side of the road. Well, how can we beg for mercy if we're outside of the road and people can't see us? That makes no sense. Anyway, I digress, but just focus with me on this one. Gentlemen right there, you're making me nervous. Can you just kind of turn away a little bit? Thank you. So this is what happened, right? To say I'm skittish is an understatement, okay? I'm just a little nervous. Jesus was coming, or Yeshua is what they call him. I don't know what they call him. I hear Yeshua, and I'm like, okay. And then they say Jesus. I'm like, is that the same guy? So next thing you know, we're walking, right? And they say, here he is. And they said, this guy's a healer. And I'm like, okay, well, what do we do? And they're like, well, let's go up and ask for mercy. And I'm like, he heals. I'm like, well, how much does he? Like, I only got so many of money. It's like, I don't know, like, if we have enough. And they were like, he heals for free. And I'm like, free, 90 free? And they were like, yes, just free. And I'm like, okay, so, but his disciples, they make me nervous. Because, you know, Peter's kind of rough around the edges. You know, the guy carries a knife. I don't know if he's got some anger issues. There's a lot going on with him. Anyway, so I'm kind of, everybody moves to the front, right? And I'm in the back. And I'm just like, have mercy, have mercy. But, like, you know, in case the disciples go crazy, I'm in the back so I can run. So Jesus says, go to the rabbis because your faith has healed you. And I'm like, is that it? And then next thing you know, we go to the rabbis. And let me tell you something. When I say my skin was as clear as anything, as my throat, it was amazing. And I wanted to say thank you. I really did. But again, Peter makes me nervous. That guy, I don't trust him. He has a weird look to him or something, you know? And so I told one of the other ones, I don't know which one, I'm like, hey, can you tell the guy who did the healing thank you, or give him a gift basket or some wine or something? I don't know. But just, if you guys see him, his name is Yeshua, he goes by Jesus, whatever his name is, when you see him, can you just tell him I said thank you?
So before I got sick, I was very devout, and I always believed that when I saw other people who were ill, it's because of something that they had done wrong, like a sin that they had committed. Maybe they're not praying enough, they're not reading the text properly. And so when I got sick, I just made this assumption, like, oh, I must, whoops, what'd I do? And so I've been trying to follow all of the sacred rituals and trying to do things well so that hopefully I can maybe become clean again. And then this guy comes and he just heals me. Like, he skips all the steps and he doesn't do any of the things that I always thought that I was supposed to do, and miraculously, I'm just better. And to be perfectly honest, I can't say thank you because I find that very offensive. He broke every rule. And now I don't know what to do with that information.
No, 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 no! What did he just do to me? Look, I was just following my friends. We're all beggars, right? Then he healed me. This isn't me. This is not my identity. Everyone I know is unclean. I mean, we live together, we eat together, we commiserate together. I can't go back to the colony like this. I mean, look at me. I'm clean and clear and supposed to be happy. I'm the freak now. I ain't thanking him for this. I'm the freak.
You know, when I was young, I looked and felt like everybody else. I had a good future, I had lots of friends, even had a little money. But I started to get older and things started to happen. I started to get sick. Lesions came out on my face and on my hands, and I started not to be able to feel anything anymore, and my eyesight got bad. I didn't know what was happening. People wouldn't associate me with me. They wouldn't even look at me. Before long, I was just completely shunned by everybody that I knew, my friends, my family. I was a lost soul. I had nothing. I had no home. I had to beg for food and for clothing. I didn't know what to do. So I went and joined a group of other outcasts in hopes of at least finding a few kindred spirits to commiserate with. Well, one day a member of our group ventured out toward the town and heard some people talking about a healer who had been visiting them. Our friend returned with this news, and then 10 of us, myself included, decided against our better judgment to go over toward the town and try to see this man. We dared not get too close, but we, from the distance, shouted out to him, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." He just smiled. He smiled. And he told us to go and show ourselves to the priests. Well, as we went, all 10 of us were suddenly made whole, clean again. We were stunned. We were confused. We were elated. We didn't know how to react to this. It was crazy. My hopelessness had been turned inside out, and I was myself again. I was so completely happy for the first time in years that I just ran off laughing and shouting and jumping for joy. It never once occurred to me to go back and thank him.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. He healed me. Whatever. Look. I get it. I'm better now. He's not getting any thank you out of me. I spent my life, my career, my very self at the front of that gate every day for the past 10 years begging for someone to help me. Please, sir, a dollar, a dime, a nickel, a penny, anything. Please, sir. Please, ma'am, can I have a little bite to eat? Some water, please. Unclean, unclean, please. And then the thank yous. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, ma'am. And I would beg and cower, never looking up. I had to say thank you just to eat. I worked a guy for 2 hours a week ago. 2 hours begging him for anything. Please, I'm starving. I begged him for food. And you know what he gave me? The stem of a pumpkin. What do you do with a pumpkin stem? Thank you, sir, for the pumpkin. I'm sorry, Jesus. Appreciate it, whatever. This begging thing is all I've known, and I am all thank you'd out.
It started one day when I was cooking. I took a pot off the fire and burned my hand, but I didn't feel it. My daughter had to show me the blister. Then I lost all the feelings. I couldn't touch my children. I couldn't run after them while they played. I couldn't touch my husband. And then it broke out all over my face and my body, and my children were afraid of me. And my husband looked at me with disgust instead of love. I didn't make this happen, but to them I was unclean. So I had to take refuge with other outcasts. And we had to beg for our food. I, who had always done the cooking, I had to beg for my food. And then this wonderful, kind man came to us and said, we could be healed. We could be clean. Go to the priests and it will be gone. And it was gone. I ran to a pool of water and looked at my reflection and it was gone. So I ran home to find my family. I was looking for my children to see if they still remembered me, to find my husband to show him I was whole again and maybe we could be together again. But I forgot to thank that wonderful, kind man who healed total strangers. They say he is a carpenter. Well, he took time to rebuild me.
I'm sorry, I do not believe Jesus had anything to do with my healing. Nothing. I mean, I know it happened. Obviously, I couldn't be here talking if it didn't. But I guess the question is how? And I've never been and will never be the guy who believes in magic or miracles or whatever. And that's what Jesus represents to me, is just this insane idea of magic and miracles that's not true. There has to be a reasonable, intelligent explanation, and he's not it. So, yeah, I was healed. But I don't have to give Jesus thanks for that, because he didn't do anything. He gets no credit.
I believe in showing my gratitude with broadcasting and making others know when something great's happened. Well, I was healed and I was whole, and no longer was I struggling with the thing that I've been going through the last couple, half of my life. So I had to go let my community know. I need to make sure the whole world know that the Messiah is amongst us. That is how I show my gratitude. What better way? That the whole world will know that this man is here. I have no time to go back and thank him. Everybody needs to know about this man.
So, I'm healed. I don't know how it happened, but I'm healed. What do I even do with this? I don't I just don't know. Can somebody just help me? Because I don't know. This is how I've spent all of my life, and now I'm healed. Where do I go? I don't know. Look at me. I'm clean. I wanted to be this way, but I didn't think it would ever happen, and it's happened. I don't know.
You have heard the story of the 10. So let's take a few minutes to meditate and think about what we just heard and saw. I was wondering which one of the 10 you can relate to the most. When you heard this story, where did you see yourself in the story? Let's take a few minutes and think about that.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.